Bonnie Johnny, everyone. This is Professor Amon Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach. Welcome to the Conscious Corner. Tonight we got a special show, along with my co-host, historian Joe Hembrick. We're going to be discussing the life and legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer, her mother, and we're going to recognize her for her contribution as being one of the outstanding Black women of her time to be active. She started the Peace and Freedom Party, but very few young people know about Fannie Lou Hamer, and very few teachers introduce her to their classes in world history or U.S. history. But we're going to look at Fannie Lou Hamer. Then we're going to discuss the replacement theory, and we're going to discuss what African Americans should be doing in preparation for this civil war that they're predicting, and these militias of preparation, and why the government is not being a little bit more aggressive in dealing with these militias. So we're going to start the film right now. Take notes and ask questions about the boldness. I mean, you're going to hear about the Deep South in Mississippi and the things that they went through to get the vote in Mississippi. And still, the European is trying to suppress the vote to this day. So let's go, Brother Rashidi.
Is the light mine? I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, is the light mine? I'm gonna let it shine. This blue light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. My mom used to always sing, "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine." Her singing had an urgency about it, an urgency for people to listen, for people to know that they were working for a cause, and everybody needed to join in, because there was so much against the Black people back then. My name is Jacqueline Hamer Flakes, and I'm the youngest and only living daughter of the late civil rights activist, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer. People have written books, they have made movies, they have done bios, but they really don't know the real Fannie Lou Hamer.
We have been Black powerless people for 400 years.
My name is Monica Land, and Fannie Lou Hamer was my great aunt. Her husband, Pap, and my maternal grandfather were brothers. One of the things that I saw that was missing in all of the documentaries and clips that I'd seen on Aunt Fannie Lou was the family element. Stories that I had been told and heard my entire life, those were missing. That personal side of her life was missing, and I thought people needed to see that. Aunt Fannie Lou had always said was that she had spoken at every college and university campus there was. And once we started researching this film, we saw that that was just about true. She had a very large presence.
I've been very concerned with young Black people in Mississippi. And there's no need of getting an education, running to some other place. Fight and make it right here. I'd take a chance in Mississippi quicker than I would Chicago. Because we at least know where we are here. But they got some of the same hypocrites up there. It's just like these white racists down here.
I just thought, you know, why not let her tell her own story? She was known, you know, for her public speaking. She was such a fiery speaker.
I didn't come to Washington to hear no bills being legislated that they would feed me in 1972. What in the world is going on between 1972? I'm thinking about what you gonna do for my people in December.
When she spoke before other people, she told them about her background, her history, the cotton fields, where she came from. And so it just seemed natural to just build that and let her tell her own existence.
See, Mississippi is not actually Mississippi's problem. Mississippi is America's problem.
My name is Jimmy Lee Lacy, and Aunt Fanny is my great aunt. She was the baby of the family. She believed truly in God. To have a family was kind of a religious family, and you was going to do something in the church. If she was there, you were going to do something, whether it was sing, pray, preach, or whatever. It looked like everybody was quiet. And if there wasn't a preacher, there's a Sunday school teacher or a Sunday school superintendent, we were brought up like that. But we was taught to love everybody, whether you was white or black. Skin never made a difference with her when it come down to righteous or come down to being right. In the same way with wrong. If you're wrong, it didn't make no difference what color you were. If you were wrong, she told you you was wrong.
If I hate you because you hate me, I'm no better than you are. And all we want to do is to make these people understand that we are human beings and we can work together.
Long before she got involved in civil rights, she was saying,
we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. We are tired of working for three measly dollars a day, going home and being too tired to cook what little we did have.
Because she was. Picking cotton was such a chore. My mother picked cotton, and 50, 60 years later, she's still traumatized by seeing cotton fields. She hates to see them because of the drudgery that it was on them. And so Aunt Fannie Lou did this for so long. And so that saying just followed her all of her life. Her song moved people. It motivated people. The freedom songs that she sang, that's what she used, and she was good at it.
Just think about going to a courthouse and just wanting to register to vote so that your name means something more than just having yourself being counted in the census. But just meaning something where you can vote for the president of the United States, vote for the people who are representing you in your city, in your county, in your state, in your nation. Just knowing that you have the power, or you should have had the power. But it took her going to Indianola and walking up to the counter and saying, we're here to register to vote.
She was out there figuring a way how to make people live better.
She wanted better for her children. She wanted better for her community. And I think that was the driving force, to just make things better for everyone, regardless of their color. Aunt Fannie Lou helped organize Freedom Summer.
People should be expected to get beaten. They should expect to spend in jail, and that they should expect possibly somebody to get killed.
She marched with Dr. King. She spoke. Malcolm X introduced her as America's number one freedom-fighting woman. She felt the need, with others, including Mrs. Ella Baker, to create the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, or the MFDP.
That a political party should be open to all the people who wish to subscribe to its principles.
That was created because the official Democratic Party of Mississippi didn't allow black people to participate.
In 1964, when Mama Fannie went before the Credentials Committee, she walked in there with her purse on her arms and I'm going to say she was only 5'4", but she was walking tall that day. When it was time for her to speak, she said,
"Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to sleep with our telephones off of the hook because our lives be threatened daily?"
And while she was speaking and telling about all the horrible things that were going on in the Mississippi Delta, President Lyndon B. Johnson did all that he could to make sure that it wasn't seen. They went to emergency commercials. He didn't know that that night it was aired anyway. And people all over the world saw that. They saw that she was telling what was going on. She wasn't fearful about telling what was going on because she went point A to point Z. And at the end, she had tears in her eyes. So that let everybody know that it was serious.
She was a very, very important part of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. What drove her was hearing that Black people could vote, you know, and have a say in what she called their destiny.
Here they come, followers of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. They've been here at the House of Representatives all day long from this morning. They are all now under arrest, charged with unlawful occupancy of a public building.
I realize who my mama, Fannie Lou Hamer, was when she took us on a trip with her to Atlanta, Georgia. And they had a convention going on, and I saw mama on stage, and she had that hand on her hip, and her head was reared back, and she was talking, and she was giving the information on what happened to her in Winona when she was beaten.
What happened to her in Winona, Mississippi changed her forever.
I have a blood clot now in the artery to the left thigh and a permanent kidney injury on the right side from that beating.
As they were leaving the jail, they were told that Medgar Evers had been assassinated that morning.
15 minutes past midnight, Evers got out of his car beside his home in a Negro residential area. In a vacant lot about 40 yards away, a sniper fired a single shot from a high-powered rifle at Evers' silhouette. The bullet hit him in the back, crashed through his body, through a window into the house. He died within an hour at a Jackson hospital.
She said later that that could have been what spared their lives, because she'd heard the law enforcement officials talking about killing them and throwing them in the Big Black River. But because Medgar Evers had been assassinated earlier that morning, all eyes were going to be on Mississippi, and it was going to be too much publicity to do that. And so she honestly believed that the unfortunate death of Medgar Evers is what saved their lives.
I've been beaten in jail till my body was hard as metal. My house was bombed January 28, 1971, but I'm not stopping.
One of the things that moved me about her personality, her voice was so commanding.
In 1963 or 1964, we didn't have many people registered in the Mississippi, but today we have 60% of the Black population registered in Mississippi. We have 42 elected officials in the state of Mississippi, and one day you will be proud when you can say, "Senator Fannie Lou Hamer, because I'm on my way, baby."
She said that, you know, people may talk about me because they consider me uneducated, but still they were afraid of her because she had the power. We found all of these television interviews.
Say, will you welcome, please, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer.
Where she was face to face with older white politicians. She was not intimidated by them because they were educated, particularly when she knew what she was talking about.
Even after the 1965 Voting Rights Bill passed and
They sent a few registrars in Mississippi. They were able to get a few thousand people registered, but they are still is not accepted on the state book. And the only way these people can vote is on a national election. Well, how can they say they're fighting for the right for people to vote when we're not allowed to vote in the state of Mississippi?
You've got a good point there, but...
That was amazing for me to see, that you had these old politicians who had been in politics for years with this woman that came out of the cotton field and told them where to go. You know, it's both funny and amazing at the same time that she had that kind of power, she had that kind of presence.
In the state of Mississippi, and we are tired of people saying that we are satisfied.
It was so effective. Dr. Martin Luther King did not like to follow her on stage because she was so dramatic. Harry Belafonte raised the money that sent her and several other SNCC delegates to Africa to visit President Sekou Touré.
Mr. Harry Belafonte's wife, Julie, was with her. And Mama Fanny was amazed by the things that she saw in Ghana. Black people working in the bank, running the bank, running the stores. You know, people, the president came to the hotel where they were. And Miss Julie came up to the hotel room and she was like, Fanny, the president is here to see you. And Mama was like, no, I'm not going down there. I got rollers in my hair. So Miss Belafonte and her family, they all laugh about that because Mama was family to them. Whenever she was in New York, she stayed in their home. The picture that I saw that made me know that I'm gonna say Mama is famous was a picture of the Kennedys. And I said, Mama, who is that lady? She's pretty. And she said, that's your godmama. And I'm like, my godmama? And she said, that's Jacqueline Kennedy. And I'm like, oh. Now, I don't know if she was just saying that to make me feel good, but I'm still hanging on that story. That's my godmama. She had this best friend, Miss Rose. And she would write letters to Miss Rose where she's really just being a mother and being a friend. This is a letter that Mama wrote on October 13th, 1965. Dear Rose, I received the package today. Thank you. Thank you very much. Rose, I've been very sick. Also, my husband. He stayed in the hospital 14 days and nights with a slipped disc. It's also corrupted. But he's up now, not well, but better. And I am better, thank God. The children are fine, they're in school. I hope all your family are fine. Rose, my daughter that's 21 is going to be a mother in November. If you can find any used baby clothes, please send them to me, Rose. Rose, I met a wonderful lady in Portland. She knew you. I told her you are a mother for me, although I'm the oldest. I thank God there are people like you who care. Last night, we watched two cars stop in front of the house with white people in them. We saw one fella get out and a white girl. We don't know why they stopped because there are no white people on this street. Who do we report this to? Nobody have been convicted. That's what made me question America. How can we say this is a free country when all this can happen? Oh, God, I wonder how long. Well, I have to tell you, as you're one of the greatest friends I ever had. Answer soon. Yours for God and for justice, Fannie Lou Hamer.
When our lead researcher and consultant, Dr. Megan Parker Brooks, found the letters and I started reading the letters, it was just so sad because she really poured out her heart to her friend Rose Fishman. And it was almost like seeing two different people.
You saw the person, you know, who motivated the crowd and got people to go register and vote, and the person who was shot at and all of that. But then in the letters, you see a woman, you see a mother, a wife, a friend, and all of the baggage that came with that.
This is another letter that Mama Fanny wrote to Mrs. Edgar E. Smith. And this is a person in Massachusetts that she knew. Dear Mrs. Smith, this is to assure you that your letters and checks and also all the boxes. Mrs. Smith, the money was so much help. I've been sick again and couldn't have gone to see a doctor. If you all hadn't helped me, I just wish I could put it in writing how I feel about what you all are doing for us. It makes my heart feel so good. Mrs. Smith, I've lasted a long time behind the beating. I got in jail, but it is catching up with me now. My whole body sometimes is sore. But I'm going to work until my days are done. Thank you all for everything. You're for God and justice for men, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer.
She had just tremendous health issues. And when she was told that she had a tumor and needed to have it removed, during the procedure, a white doctor performed a hysterectomy on her without her knowledge or consent. And apparently at the time, a very common practice, and it was termed a Mississippi appendectomy.
How can you do that? But that's what they were dealing with back then in the 50s and the 60s. When I think about those things, I really get angry. I get angry because she worked hard. She worked tirelessly. And I mean, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it was already in a late stage when she found out. She would tell you, Cookie, come on in here, baby, and lay down by Mama. I'm cold. And back then, I didn't know what she was really doing. But the last few days of her being in the hospital in Mount Bayou, Daddy Pap took us to see her. And we started walking in the room. Me and my sister started walking in the room. And she started screaming, get him out of here! Get him out of here! She didn't want us to see her like that. So my memory is not of someone who's frail or anything like that, because she never let us see her at that point. But my memory is, Cookie, baby, come on in here. Get into bed with Mama. Just thinking about her, loving and caring for four daughters, of which she didn't give birth to any. But she loved us, and she took care of us. Every time I come out here, I can just feel her spirit.
We won't determine some of our destiny, and this is what Black Power means.
She is such a tremendous part of our history. It's so sad to me, and all that she accomplished and tried to accomplish, most people don't even know who she is. We take for granted being able to walk in the front door of a grocery store, being able to go in any grocery store. We take for granted being able to go to the schools of our choice. We take for granted being able to eat anywhere we want, sit anywhere on the bus, drink at any water fountain. Those are things that she and so many others fought for and died for. And so because her sacrifices were so great and she died the way that she did, and she is such a part of history, I would just like to see her recognized for what she did and for the sacrifices that she made for this effort.
We want people all over America to know that we're fighting on a principle. And we gonna say now, go and tell it on the mountain. You know it. Go tell
Fine Gani, everyone. Wow. Dr. Shabazz, what did you think about that video?
Wow, just what you said. Amazing. She is phenomenal. I had to verify which part of the Divine Nine she was part of, but she's a Sora from the Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. So she's not my Sora, but she's definitely a sister. So I'm just so happy that you have chosen her to, you know, refresh our memory, to put some light on her, and to keep her star shining bright, because we must keep her bright. That's all that I can say.
Yeah. She was definitely an example of Black womanism and a role model to emulate. And I'll get into some things after I hear. Linda, you wanted to say something? Linda Shorter?
Just in the saying, because can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I was total agreement with what she was saying. A phenomenal woman, yes. And thank you for refreshing my mind and my spirit, right, friend Fanny Lou Hamer. Because one of her favorite sayings, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm telling you, I live by that all the time. So thank you, thank you, thank you for just putting that in my spirit. And I needed that too.
All right. Brother Mchinga, did you get any perspective on it? Mchinga?
Yeah, it was, you know, pretty powerful. You know, I've been a little familiar with her for a little while. Just appreciate you documenting this on the podcast tonight. Hopefully a lot of, you know, younger generations can, you know, be able to hear about this. You know, when I went down to Montgomery, you know, a few weeks ago at the Legacy Museum, Equal Justice Initiative Museum, you know, they had covered her. She was in a few of the videos, and just refreshing, like I said, refreshing my mind on, you know, how powerful she was. And this reminds me of a lot of other freedom fighters from back in the day. You know, I'm down here in the South, you know, a lot of my relatives and people, you know, they were involved in a lot of the fight for justice. And what I liked about it also, it showed, you know, the family side, had family members, you know, talking about her, you know, which, you know, gave it a different twist, you know, it kind of widened my perspective as well, you know, that she just wasn't, you know, she was a family person and a community person and a activist for everybody, you know. So, but anyway, thank you for presenting that tonight.
Brother Hembrick, Brother Joe.
Yeah, a powerful piece. I was took some notes on stuff. The singing in YMC. Yeah, she made that analogy that, you know, that Malcolm made about, you know, the North and the South. As long as you're, you know, South Canadian border, you're South. I like that. I don't know about that love everybody stuff that they would be promoting, but I guess so. And the thing that kind of stuck out to me, that when she visited Ghana, how the Black people were running everything, the stores, the hotels, and all that. But it's not that way today. So I think we need to examine, from an international standpoint. But, you know, powerful sister, which the sisters are the most powerful, which I've been saying from Jump Street, and I'm glad one of them knew it. I wish the rest of them would find out. And I got one last question on that song. They were saying, go tell it on the mountain. I remember it being a little different at the end of that verse. I thought it said, you know, to go on the mountain that Jesus Christ was born. That how they ended it, but she ends it another way, which I like much better anyway. That's it.
Brother Rasha Key?
Yeah, she showed a tremendous amount of strength. And, you know, it, you don't have to be the Harvard educated person in order to bring intelligence. And she showed that, and with her will to fight for rights that was just due. And when they mentioned the strength, well, the sacrifice she made, you know, for us to have certain comforts, you know, along with a multitude of other people, they fought for us to be in the position that we're in today to be able to discuss this and have these comforts in life. And a lot of people don't look at it that way. You know, we didn't have these comforts in those times, a lot of people. And so people like her made the sacrifice for us to be in the position we're in. And I see what the things that we're doing, we're taking out time to acknowledge people like her and then give information that could help people down the line. So I just have great admiration for people like her.
Yeah. Yeah, one of her most used quotes is, never forget where you came from, and always praise the bridges that brought you over. A very significant quote, because many kids or young people are born today, and they think that we always had cell phones. They don't remember the history of the cell phone, of the telephone. A big 25-foot cord with a big black phone like a weight with a rotary numbers. And now they're walking around as if that's a normal thing. And when you think about history, as Malcolm said, it's the foundation of all understanding. When we think of civil rights activism, we generally think of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Andrew Jackson, and mostly men. And we don't focus on that all hands were on deck. Youth, Martin Luther King went to the youth because the adults, if they got arrested, they lost their job. So the youth, document this in the Eyes of the Pride. That's why they had, if you look at the Eyes of the Pride, you see a lot of youth played a major role throughout our history in struggle. So we look at our youth today who are when Carter G. Woodson said that we are miseducated. And he's not just talking about miseducated in public school. He's talking about miseducated about the struggle and about our challenges and about their role in the struggle. Because it's all hands on deck. Kids getting killed just as much as adults. And so we got to look at it like that. But one of the beautiful things about this film, it just shows the greatness of a woman who was beaten, a woman who organized the Democratic Party and demonstrations. It wasn't just the March on Washington that she formed the Mississippi Freedom Party, one of the first independent Black political parties. Even though we had a lot during the colonial days, the Tan Party, the Colored Party and all of those things in different states. Second, it talks about, you know, Mississippi is a very weird, very challenging place to live. Where Emmett Till was killed. That's where they, right now, you know, the Jackson, Mississippi is the capital of Mississippi. And they, we want to thank the NAACP for filing a lawsuit about how they're treating the people down there. And then you hear about Brett Farr and them getting the money to build a tennis court and money meant to go to the poor people of Mississippi. The Great Migration, most people in Chicago and various areas migrated from Mississippi and the Louisiana area. So we know we owe a lot to Fannie Lou Hamer with regards to her being a role model of Black womanism and of courage and, you know, deeply spiritual. You know, irregardless of what you think about spirituality, I'm not talking about organized religion. It is a powerful, powerful element within the psyche of people when they deal with their spirituality, because it's being. Even though you may be sick, but your spirit is healthy. Even though you may be going through a lot of challenges in life, but you stay upbeat and you stay, she's just a model of excellence of us as a people. So we think about the politics today and you ask yourself a fundamental question. What did you do Black today? What philosophy did you practice that came from a Black cultural apparatus? Black nationalism philosophy of Malcolm X, Talented 10 perspective with W.E.B. Du Bois, Back to Africa movement with Martin Delaney and all those that, and Marcus Garvey with Black, you know, Black nationalism and things of this nature. I mean, how do you shape your life to spin off the cultural apparatus that sucks you into their reality and you leave yours? It's like you're walking around and you don't think there's no problem. You know, and because you can go to Disneyland, your freedom is a choice of Taco Bell or Jack in the Box. And you think, well, I got freedom. I can go Jack in the Box, McDonald's, you know. But it's about shared power. And I think one of her statements was in there saying, you know, we are Black powerlessness, and that's what we're fighting for, the power, just the power to vote. If voting didn't mean anything, why they work so hard to stop you from voting? Because it do mean something. You can vote people, especially in local elections, school boards, city council, county supervisors, police chiefs. You know, I mean, all those things play a role. But the consciousness of the average young person coming out of high school, I'm 18, you know, they're not thinking about a political struggle. You know, and it's not their fault, because, you know, this shouldn't be, the Fannie Lou Hamer video shouldn't be just in public schools or universities. It should be in the home. This is something you share with your kids and have a discussion. Your young people, you give them a sense of consciousness or the reality that they're going out there. The Emmett Till story, they got a movie coming out called Till. I commend it. I mean, you know, I talked about his mama, how strong she was, another Black woman that dealt with the assassination of her son as a teenager and things of this nature and the criminality of the, jury system and the justice system. So that's very important that they learn these lessons. Now, you know, it's hard. Most people don't like to teach these things to our children. It's like teaching them about sex. But at the same time, it affects them. You know, it's just like you have a child at 16 to 17 and you become a father at 16 or 17, it affects the rest of your life. You know, and these issues that we face is affecting their lives. And they're walking around. I don't know why I didn't get hired. I did good on that interview. I was number one and they chose somebody else. I don't know why. You know, no one's teaching them about racism. And as Brother Hembrick always say, entrepreneurship, you know, at an early age, how to save your money. If you just saved all your Pac-Man money, you might be able to buy a car and fix it up and sell it, and then buy another car and fix it up and sell it. If you save your money, and you know, and then shoot for excellence. When I used to speak, and Rasha Key had me speaking the Centennial every year, I would say, y'all got to be excellent. That means scholarships. That's athletic scholarship is just as important as a sports scholarship. And so we have to sometimes have family meetings and discussions for those of us that are heads of families or members of a family. I know Fannie Lou Hamer, she adopted four girls. Now, they don't say how she adopted. I don't think she went to court. These are girls either leaving a bad situation. And those days, they took kids in. They ain't had no paperwork or nothing like that. They just did it out of the South, you know. They beat this woman so bad. It was pathetic. And then assassination of Mega Evers, is as they said, saved their lives, possibly. But the whole thing, the freedom song, turning spiritual songs into freedom songs. That's a beautiful thing, you know. There's the light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm going to let it shine, you know. I'm not going to let nobody put my light out so they like to shine. You know, I mean, that's a very important thing. Go tell it on the mountain, everywhere. You know, I mean, tell the truth. Speak truth. You know, it's just like Martin Luther King said, the moral thing is so long, but it bends toward justice. These are critical times. We're in critical times. When the Black Panther Party, us organizations, and Black movement started in 1965, they declared them national risk to security, and they formed put forth the COINTELPRO to disrupt or neutralize the leadership and break up these organizations, getting them to fight each other. But yet, they let these militias exist for years. Then they turn around and say, well, they're the biggest threat to democracy. A democracy we've been denied all the time, but they're talking about their democracy, you know, from a democracy to an autocracy, you know, a dictatorship. And they didn't infiltrate them, and they white. They can easily infiltrate them and disrupt them. But they had the freedom to exist. It makes sense how they did the Black organizations, broke them all up. Only one still standing of substance, that's the organization now. You know, and people won't, you know, people don't look at it like that. These militia groups pose a threat. They threaten the Black woman and her daughter and grandmother voting as voter registers, you know, and they testified before the January 6th committee about their lives being threatened, you know, and nobody go to jail for it. No major investigation. Of who were the people that came into their house and threatened them to confess that they were cheating on the vote, you know. Man, just, and then they talk about, oh, everybody's law. There's no law in the Constitution that say you ain't supposed to indict people during a political, you don't indict political representatives. So that means they're above the law. They're still indicting young people. They just indicted a bunch of people for welfare fraud, this, that. It's still a political year. There's nothing in the Constitution that says don't arrest or indict people 3 months out from the election. There's nothing in the Constitution that said that you got to have a filibuster. You know, this is something they made up for minority rule. And minority rule has been, as Brother Hembrick say, they what, 15% of the world population, but operates 200% of the weaponry and guns and power, that's all they make, so that they can rule, minority rule. They always practice that. They did it in South Africa. Millions of Black people couldn't vote, couldn't participate. Just the white in an apartheid system. They do it in Palestine. No Arabs could vote, just Zionist white people in Israel. Well, it's really Palestine, they call it. It's not the biblical Israel that you read about. This is some stuff the white folks made up. They first wanted to go to Africa and first wanted to go three and four other places, but they settled in that area. Because no white group has been over there. These are white people in the middle of colored land, you know. So we look at this Fannie Lou Hamer as a role model for Black womanism and courage. They said, hey, look, we don't just want to know about her activism. We want to know what she thought. How did she get it the way she thought? And we want to know about her role as far as being a mother, a husband, and at the same time, an activist. You know, we got people who won't be wives and husbands. They think all they're supposed to do is watch TV. You know, watch TV, eat popcorn, you know, and try to pay a mortgage and let everybody else do the fighting and the struggle. It don't go that way. All hands on deck. Anybody else got anything else to say, Brother Hembrick?
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
Yes, I liked in the video how they talked about just the medical malpractices that historically we've gone through. And to hear that she had that experience just breaks my heart. And again, while we have to continue to make changes because, you know, just giving women hysterectomies involuntarily, they don't know all the mess that it caused. It just, you know, I know it breaks my heart, like I said, to hear that. And I'm thankful that I'm at the position to where I'm part of an organization where we're working to make changes on how the medical institution treats Black women and how we support each other as we confront that institution. So I wanted to share that.
Yeah, and William Shockley in the 70s, who won a Nobel Peace Prize for a transistor, became a geneticist, and him and Bell said that you should sterilize Black women in the South because the kids are going to be dumb. And this was it. That's where the Bell theory came from, that women be weak and that we should do the poor women in the South, sterilize them or give them hysterectomy. This was what he advocated. William Shockley, just look it up. You know, he was known for that. They still practice that. always saying women have female problems. You got to take out this and do that. If you're not strong enough, and I mean, they don't do it to everybody, but they do it to a significant enough. You understand? And giving their kids fertility pills and trying to stop the growth of babies, except for during the Holocaust of enslavement, where they had breeding farms. And they had brothers giving their mama's babies, sons giving their mama babies. And giving, your sister may be your mama and your brother may be your daddy, you know. I mean, it's mixed up. And these are some sick people we're dealing with. And I'm not saying all of them, because some of them in your family, I understand that. I ain't talking about them. I ain't talking about them with a personal relationship. But they're outcasts to their own race as far as they're concerned, their race. You know, they it's just like this this city hall thing about these Latinos saying that these two males who adopted a black baby was mistreating the baby and they accused them of racism. But that's because they were Jewish. But they hid behind the race issue to get rid of it, or trying to get rid of the Latino. They don't care about nobody saying that. It was about the Jewish thing. And gay, both of them were gay, so they adopted a black child. So the team was saying they treat that baby wrong and blah, 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 blah. And it was racist, we'll get rid of them. But anyway, then do you have anything else to say?
No, I don't have anything else to say, but I'm just taking some good notes because I love it. So thank you.
You must see a guy. Machinda, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I just want to say, she was saying, she suffered from breast cancer. Just want to remind everybody, it's labeled Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, just pass that on for males and females.
Yeah. Physical fitness, physical health, if you got the insurance, get a checkup as much as you can, and hopefully that they don't abuse it. I remember, I'm on dialysis. One of my urologists said, he works for Kaiser. He said, Kaiser don't prevent you from getting on dialysis. They prepare you for it. I'm going to be giving a lecture on Proposition 29 to the Black Workers Association sometime this month. And they wanted to know, should we vote no? I said, no, I'm voting yeah. Then why are you voting yeah? Because they're crooks. And they just, they won. I'm 6'5", 280 pounds. And then another person would come in there, 5'4", 120 pounds, and they give them the same treatment, 3 days a week. Some have 3.5 hours and some have 4 hours. Like, we're all the same. We're not all the same. You understand? And all this proposition is asking for is that they have a doctor all the time on staff there. Right now, the doctors come in. How you doing? You need a prescription. You don't need none. I'll see you next week. And they charge you $600 for that visit. 3 times a week or 3 or 4 times, whenever they come in and ask you a question, it's $600. The average person on dialysis treatment for a year is $1 million+. And they're talking about they're going to close clinics. I think they got over 7,500 clinics. In the nation, and in California they got over 800 and so. Just in LA, I think they got somewhere around 300 or 400. And these people making the commercials never tell you what clinic they're at. And if you read who's sponsoring the commercial, it's all the Bedia, Phoenicia, and Reno. All of them. I mean, Phoenicia makes a machine, and doctors got stopped in the dialysis treatment centers. So they make money. They come up to you while you're getting your treatment and say, hey, I'm going to give you some medicine. And the same medicine they're charging you for the nurse giving it to you. And you look at your bill, they charge you $500 for some vitamin D, for some iron. And then they just say, yeah, just give you a prescription. I said, I don't want it. You understand? I don't want that. I got my own vitamins. You understand? But they still find ways to, every Band-Aid they put on you, everything. I mean, and they have no regulation. They ain't going to shut down those clinics. And if they shut down one, they just send you to another one that they operate. They ain't but three major operators. You know, Reno, Phoenicia, and Davidia. And you understand that it's a racket. So they don't want nobody knowing their books, knowing their nothing. They don't want no people die there. They have heart attack. They sometimes, you know, I mean, it's, you know, some people go there, they take Benadryl and go to sleep. I'll be wide awake watching them. You understand? Now, watching TV, I watch them. You understand? I want to be around technicians in case something go wrong. But I'll be ready to, you know, watch and making sure that they be on the top of it when it comes to me. And I befriend them. I have a good relationship with my technicians. So they give me the game on a lot of things I could do. But my point is that it's a racket. So I'm voting yeah, but the people that sponsored the bill ain't got no money because all they're saying is that we want a doctor there and a couple little things that they want as far as, giving you reports, better reporting. And they don't want to do that. They just want they free to do what they want to do to you. But anyway, getting back to Fannie Lou. I don't know, Brother Roski, you have any other things to add?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay, well, hey, why don't you go ahead and take us on out then?
Okay, well, we have, let me put it up here, and she's with us this evening, Sister Make It Happen, or Making It Happen. I think I've been a little wrong on the name there. So she's here this evening, so she's going to tell us. I possibly been getting the name wrong because I know it's, well, I'm going to let her say it. Okay. Is it Sister Making It Happen or Sister Make It Happen?
It's Sister Making It Happen because I make it happen wherever I am. So I'm making it happen. It's an action.
I like that.
So I'm going to go ahead and make sure I have it correct from now on. But the Wonders of Nubia, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, we're going to have a great time honoring our ancestors, looking at some of the great things and ideas and systems. Concepts that they left for us, you know, like I said, my daughter, she works at the Getty and they have this exhibit going on. So I'll be able to share some of that with you. And as I looked at it, what I consider a wonder, I wouldn't have selected the items that they selected, but I'm sure that the items that are in their exhibit are meaningful and part of the culture and have a great contribution. But I want to share on Wednesday just some of the wonders that have impacted my life. And I'm sure many of us on the call For example, I know one of our dear brothers actually honored our elders and our ancestors with his baby girl's name, you know, my aunt. I mean, what a great honor, right? And so things of that nature, we will go through and discuss on Wednesday. My husband, you know, our oldest son's name is Imhotep, you know, so giving honor in those areas and understanding why that was done and some of the thinking, and I'm sure our guests and Brother Hembrick will share some of the reasonings for making those choices in terms of our children and as we set them out in the world. But I'm excited for Wednesday, and I look forward to a very engaging conversation. We can reason with one another and continue to build up our armor so that as we are out here facing this world, we have our shield and our protection that has been provided for us.
Okay, thanks a lot. So I'm looking forward to it also.
Thank you.
All right, Professor Ra.
Well, you know, my wife's a mother died, so I was locked down, but I'll be ready next week. I'm still going to try to get Damian Goodman to come and talk about gentrification and immigration as a form of replacing us as Black people. And so they just did a major article on that in the LA Times. I'll send it to you, Rashiki. And we're going to be trying to get Damian Goodman, who is the chairman, president of the Crenshaw. I can't even remember the name of the organization. He's over. But he'll be our guest speaker, I hope. All right.
Okay. Well, condolences to you and the family.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
All right. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.
All right.